Yes, my car guru is on the air for a Tuesday morning, Groundhog Day 2021. Good morning to you, Mr.
Punxsutawney? Punxsutawney Phil?
He's already been out this morning.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, about 7:30 this morning.
Okay. I wonder if they had the big celebration up there like they had on that movie Groundhog Day.
No.
Or is that just...
No, they did not. They normally do that. They had it virtually this morning. I don't know how you have a virtual celebration.
Can you get COVID from a groundhog?
Well, you know, they probably don't know the exact answer to that.
Okay.
I don't know that you could get it from the groundhog. The groundhog might be able to get it from you.
I just wonder if that question has ever really been asked.
I'm sure they ponder that up there at some point during this pandemic. But anyway, Phil...
Don't give me credit for creativity then.
Okay. Phil saw his shadow. I don't know how he saw it. It's supposed to be socked in with snow and cloudy and everything up there. I'm theorizing they must have had a spotlight on him or something, and he saw his shadow.
And that means?
6 more weeks of winter.
Okay. Well, you know, I thought last night, I didn't think it was going to get as deep as it did in my hometown.
Yeah, you said there was more in Greenville than there is up here in Gray.
Yeah, I have about 5 inches on my deck. And, you know, sometimes it's really dusty, though. I mean, it's like it's not packed or anything.
Right, it's not real wet snow. It's dry snow.
And it was, you know, quite pretty. I watched the deer frolicking in my field. That's fun. I love to watch deer run. I would have a hard time shooting a deer.
Yeah,
I have a problem with it. I mean, there's probably more deer than there need to be.
Yeah.
But they're just so beautiful, you know, when they run and the white tails are bouncing up and down.
Yeah.
Except
when they run
into the side of your new
F-150. Exactly, yeah. I'm not a hunter. I never was a hunter. If I was right there faced with shooting one, I don't think I could do it.
I like guns, but I don't like shooting things. I just like shooting targets.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just a mechanic. Anything mechanical is kind of a cool thing. Oh, I've got a good friend. I won't say his name on the radio, on the air, because he might not want to be associated with me. But... he is a master technician, and he's retired now, and he can fix anything. And so we were in my office the other day, and I have this old radio that used to belong to my dad.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with that radio.
Is that the radio you showed me the picture of?
Yeah. It was made somewhere during the war, somewhere between 1940 and 45.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to buy it off of you, but you said, nope,
there's no selling that. Mm-hmm. But every time you turned it on, it would just shock the whiz out of you if you touched the case on it. So David said, oops, I revealed it. David said I could fix that. So he's been working on it, and he opened up the case, and he's been working on all the resistors and transistors and tubes and things like that. But it was so funny, on the top of it, there's this card. You fold it. It's a military radio. It was called a morale radio. And it actually says morale radio on the front. It was given to the troops to boost morale. And so there's this, you fold the top up, and there's this card that kind of clips into place there. And it has where you can write down the time, the station, or that, you know, where you tune it into, and, you know, what artist or what you're listening to. And my dad had written several different things on there, and one of them was Bing Crosby. And Bing Crosby came in on at a certain time, and then some Whitman guy.
Slim Whitman?
I don't think it was Slim. Somebody else.
And I don't know many.
There were several other shows that he had written in, and I was just reflecting back. I was just wondering how many years ago, you know, did he do that? But, yeah, I grew up with the presence of that radio in my house, among many other things. You know, so much of that stuff, when you're younger, you just get used to seeing it. It just becomes a part of your background or the background of your life. You know, you don't really notice it anymore. I guess if somebody pulls it out or your parents sell it or something like that, then you you notice it. Where didn't something used to be there? You know? And I know you've probably been through that same thing.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, cars are like that, too. I mean, you grow up, and your dad had that Model A or that 55 Chevy or something. And as you get older, you know, those things, they need to be used, you know, because they definitely go down. They deteriorate. Something out in the garage, out in the cold. It just frustrates me no end to drive around and see, you know, really potentially valuable cars just sitting outside, just rusting away.
Yeah. Yard art.
Yeah. But I am glad that my parents were preservers of things, you know. Of course, I live close to my parents, and I'm able to go out to their house. And, you know, it's to me, it's like a kind of like a my family museum, you know, that mom and dad in. It's not, I don't want you to think it's really junky, because it's not. It's not like my office. Yeah, my office is a junky museum. But you know, I think these things help connect us to our past, and I don't see anything wrong with it personally.
Mm-hmm. You? No, absolutely not. You know, you mentioned things kind of being in the background. You don't pay a whole lot of attention to them until later on, but my folks had this big Magnavox stereo. You know, you've seen them, like a big console stereo, big piece of furniture,
mm-hmm.
heavy sucker. And for years, you know, I can remember that being around, and they would play it. They put records on it.
Mm-hmm.
At night before they go to sleep, they'd put a stack of records on their 33s, and they'd drop one at a time, you know, and play like they used to. And after my father passed, it was sitting back in their bedroom. And really, it was just in the way. It had gotten in the way from him. Of course, he was pretty much stuck in bed the last month or so of his life. But it really, when he would try to get up and go to the bathroom, we'd walk in the bathroom, the stereo was in the way, so we had to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me a strange feeling to get rid of that because, as you said, it was just kind of part of my growing up, seeing that radio in there, in the house, and then to have to get rid of it. First of all, it was heavy as all get out. I mean, you wouldn't think it'd be that heavy. But it had a turntable in it, 8-track player.
Oh, it had an 8-track, so it was more mm-hmm. it was more modern than the one my parents have, which we still have.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
The 8-track, when did that come along? Early 70s?
Yeah, I think that piece of furniture was probably bought in 1972 or so, okay. something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ours was, I think my parents bought their stereo in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of their first big pieces when we moved to our brand new, newly built house on Aleph Lane in St. Albans, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the time, my dad was working for Chevrolet Motor Division, and he was a parts and accessories zone manager for Chevrolet mm-hmm. in the Charleston zone, which I don't even know if there is a Charleston zone for Chevrolet now. Mm-hmm. You know, when you say Charleston around here, people don't think it's West Virginia.
They think South Carolina.
Yeah. And I was reading, a good friend of mine still lives up there, and he said, he was just talking, Charleston, when I lived there, had a population just under 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the capital state of West Virginia. Mm-hmm. You know what the population of Charleston, West Virginia is now?
I would imagine it's 300,000 or 400,000 at least, isn't it?
41,000.
Oh, really? Less than what it used to be.
Yes. That shows you what has happened to
Coal mining.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I still thought it was a lot bigger than what it used to be.
And it was what I used to refer to, my dad used to refer to it as the biggest little town.
Mm-hmm.
It had a big town, downtown feel.
Mm-hmm.
And when you walked around, there was you know, big department stores. You know what it was like. And even in, well, maybe not so much in Knoxville, the only big department store in Knoxville that I remember was Miller's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm sure there were others. But there were several big department stores downtown. I think Frankenburgers. Do you remember Frankenburgers? You ever heard of that?
No.
The Diamond. I know my mom used to always love to go to the Diamond. And there was another one that I can't recall the name. It was downtown Charleston. But, you know, the 60s was just such a period of turmoil, really, in our country. But it was a very interesting and dynamic time in the car business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had gone from these behemoths with tail fins, you know, in the 50s. Really, the only sports cars that we had
mm-hmm.
in the 50s was the Corvette. And I don't think, well, I'm talking about domestic, not foreign. There were all kinds of foreign cars, but domestic, you know, Ford, GM, Chrysler, they really didn't have much. I mean, it was the Corvette and maybe the Thunderbird.
I was going to say the T-Bird, maybe. Yeah.
But the T-Bird, and, you know, and they were doing some pretty cool things in the late 50s. Like, you could get a tri-power 57 Chevy. You could get a 283 V8 with fuel injection, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They borrowed that from the Corvette. But really, the 60s is when everything pretty much started to take off, mm-hmm. and the Mustang started it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mustang, the Falcon was a really good selling small car, and it was really Ford's first small car.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't near as small. I don't know if you remember. You remember the Falcon?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they had 2-door, 4-doors, and convertibles, and you know, the car was really selling well. But this man named Lee Iacocca thought that there was a market for the 2-door sporty car for. And believe it or not, the first thought was for young ladies to drive. That was their target. Yeah, that was their target market.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give them something pretty and attractive, sporty, easy to handle. And so the powers that be with Ford said, "Well, we just got over this Edsel thing, which we're really not over yet. We like the Falcon. Why mess with success? You mm-hmm. know, we're selling tons of these things." Chevy had just come out with the in response to the Falcon, came out with the Chevy 2, you know, which became the Nova.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, well, why mess? So what they did is they formed this secret group in the basement of one of Ford's engineering studios and started this project to build that car, the Mustang. And it had all kinds of interesting names early on, but they were doing their best to keep it out of the sights of Henry II. And eventually they decided to use the Falcon platform, which is what the 64.5 Ford Mustang was. It came out at the New York World's Fair in 1964. And first year, I think they sold 300,000. The next year, they sold close to 1 million.
Mm.
You know, obviously a tremendous success. So that was really the first foray into sports cars. And then Chevrolet responded in 67 with the Camaro.
Mm-hmm.
And then much later on, you know, Dodge came out with the Challenger, or maybe it was Plymouth Challenger, I think Dodge Charger,
mm-hmm.
I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pony cars, you know, were off. And they call them pony cars just because, you know, Mustang was the first,
mm-hmm.
you know, named after a pony.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all of that has led to where we are today, and you don't really see a lot of sports cars. You still have the Mustang. The Camaro is dying a slow death,
mm-hmm.
and it will be gone before long.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are some cars that are, of course, the Corvette is still around and probably always will be.
Mm-hmm.
It's made the transition from front engine rear drive to mid engine. And so you've got a couple companies that are bringing them back. Now, here we are in the electric age, and Nissan is getting ready to come back out with the Z car. Okay, now, it's been out. We had a 350Z. Now it's going to be called a 400Z. And it really harkens back to the old 240Z, you know, that they originally
mm-hmm.
came out with
mm-hmm.
their sports car. Although that was not the first sports car that Nissan had. And then Toyota has resurrected the Supra. I don't know if you're
familiar
with the Supra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so these become what they call, they refer to as halo cars. They're image cars for the manufacturer, and they always like to have them. You know, even Tesla has an image car. It's a two-door sports car, and that they're getting ready to come back out with that. Tesla just announced recently that their new Model S, it's called Model S Plaid, P-L-A-I-D. It will be the world's fastest production car, 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, 1.99 seconds.
That doesn't seem possible.
And it's electric.
Doesn't seem possible.
No, it doesn't. Just a minute. Count 1, 2. You're going 60.
1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi.
Yeah. And that kind of torque can get out of control. So if you want a nice little four-door sedan that will go to 60 in 2 seconds, then Tesla, you can order one, I think, as of today. And they start at $140,000. So
I wouldn't
that's
give,
100.
I wouldn't give one of those to my 16-year-old teenager, though. I guarantee you that.
Probably shouldn't.
No.
Probably shouldn't. Well, that's kind of a long intro, but we'll take a break and be back here in just a minute.
All right, back here on My Car Guru for this Tuesday morning, Groundhog Day. You know, you were talking about the sports cars. It makes me wonder that, of course, gas has gone up a little bit, and those that think they know what they're talking about are theorizing that gas is going to go way back up.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if sports cars will become more popular even so after that, or sedans or whatever it may be, because they've quit making a lot of them, right?
Well, it is a big question. I mean, nobody really knows what's going to happen. But I think if the left, you know, of the political spectrum stays in control, they are going to do everything they can to eliminate the viability of an internal combustion engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know of any better way to do that. I mean, they can't really impact the way vehicles are priced unless they add on all kinds of additional regulations, such as pushing the fuel economy standards way up. All of this makes cars more expensive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good for consumers, I don't think. The other way they do it is to increase the cost of what it takes to make them go. Gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do that with taxes, and they can use that tax revenue for any of their pet projects. I think that they raise gas taxes, that, you know, that revenue should be earmarked for safety or highways or something, you know, infrastructure, don't you?
No, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, once they get their hands on the money, you know, we really have no power, you know, over that. But I don't know. I think that's going to happen. I think you're going to see expensive gasoline. But, you know, that's like a tax, though. I mean, that's a tax on, that's just like raising your income taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the thing about it is, just about everybody has a gasoline engine. And if they start doing that nonsense, I think you're going to see a lot of pushback on that. Hopefully they won't. But that's...
We'll see.
That's kind of the direction I think they're going to go.
The next couple of years.
So I asked you coming up here if you used your four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
And you were driving a Jeep, so it's always four-wheel drive.
It is. There's certain specialty buttons you can push that seem to make maybe even more of a little bit of a difference. I don't know. We were theorizing about it. I wonder if that really works. You know, you see the button that says snow and sand and rock and all of that kind of stuff. I would never drive on a rock, I don't think.
Right. If you see a label on the back of a car that says four-wheel drive, what does that mean? Typically what that means is that you have to engage the vehicle into four-wheel drive.
Like our Ford Ranger, you have to physically put it into four-wheel drive.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, some vehicles that have four-wheel drive, like let's say an F-250 truck or a Chevy, a Silverado 2500, some of those will actually have locking hubs where you have to actually go outside and turn a dial on the center of the hub and the front wheels in order for the four-wheel drive to work on the front axle, on the front differential, okay? So, but mostly what you see right now is either front-wheel drive on today's cars or all-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all-wheel drive is, I'm a fan of all-wheel drive, and it's more of a year-round thing. I mean, it provides better traction even when it's raining,
mm-hmm.
you know. Have you ever hydroplaned?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the things that the technology that has really made a difference, there's three of them, basically. There's all-wheel drive, there's traction control, and dynamic stability control. Now, traction control and dynamic stability control are standard on all vehicles now. They didn't used to be,
mm-hmm.
but they are now. Now, you get even a higher degree of effect if you have all-wheel drive. So dynamic stability control uses throttle, okay? It will actually increase the speed of your rear wheels or front wheels or the wheels on the right or the wheels on the left mm-hmm. without you doing anything,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because what it does is when it senses the car going any way but straight, if it senses any kind of slippage, it's got this thing called a yaw sensor, YAW,
mm-hmm.
and what that does is it looks for lateral G's. So you know if it knows you're going straight down the road, if it senses the rear end coming around, it'll automatically apply braking pressure where it needs to. What allows that to happen is something called four-channel ABS, which is analog brakes that are controlled by, of course, you pushing your foot on the brake pedal will engage your brakes. But this dynamic stability control can engage one brake, your left front, or your right rear, or your left rear. And what it determines the best way to help you regain control and eliminate that yaw that's going on.
Mm.
Now, this is on every modern vehicle now, is dynamic stability control. It was mandated, just like airbags are.
Mm-hmm.
But the way to make it work the best is to have the front wheels that, I mean, if you're doing an all-wheel drive car, it's typically a front-wheel drive car today that will automatically engage the rear wheels if the front wheels slip at all. So let's say that you're driving around today and you're driving an all-wheel drive car. If you're driving, your front wheels is where all the power is. As soon as one of those wheels start to spin, the system instantaneously sends power through the transfer case to the rear wheels, and it engages them.
Mm-hmm.
When it senses that everything's cool and you're not going to be spinning anymore, or it doesn't anticipate that because nothing has happened, it will disengage automatically. Now, all-wheel drive is not an expensive option. How much would you think it would cost to upgrade a vehicle from just front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive to all-wheel drive?
$2,000.
It's less than that, yeah. I mean, maybe in a Lexus or a BMW mm-hmm. might be more.
Mm-hmm.
But in a Nissan Altima, for example, you can get an Altima in all-wheel drive, and it's only $1,200
okay.
to do that.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's a lot of money, but it really does add to the stability, especially in weather like we're having out here today.
All right. All about all-wheel drive. Let's take our last break. We'll come back and wrap things up. And back here to wrap up, my car guru for this Groundhog Day. I guess gone are the days where you had to put chains on your tires, although I see an occasional mail delivery van or something like that with chains on it.
It's all about traction. Yeah. You know, if you're driving down the road and you can look in your rearview mirror and you can see black in your tire tread marks where you went, then you've probably got about 50% traction under normal circumstances. If you see white, then you need to slow down. And too many people overdrive the conditions, especially when we were younger. But I do believe it's an important, this is a great time, if there's snow in like the big parking lots, is go out and find out what your anti-lock brakes feel like when you apply them. If you've never been through that, just get up speed about 30 miles an hour and slam on your brakes and hold the brake pedal down and watch what happens. You know, so that you're not alarmed when you feel that pushback, that feedback that you get through the pedal. Just make sure there aren't any poles or other cars or human beings in the way when you're out there doing that. And look around for cops, because they don't always like to see people do that either.
Sometimes it's
blame
me. Sometimes it's good to test it out,
though. It really is.
Yeah. All right, that'll do it. My Car Guru for this Groundhog Day. Hope everybody has a good one, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.